Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Captain Hunter's Podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. I truly appreciate it. Today, we're going to do something a little bit different. We're going to do a monthly wrap-up. This is a new segment that I think I'm going to do at the end of every month of what we've learned throughout the month. We're going to look at what's happened throughout the month as far as law enforcement and see what we can do better as law enforcement, how we can engage better with the community, what we can do to keep ourselves safe and things like that. So we're just going to take a look at some stories, some of the more infamous, if you will, stories from throughout the month, and we're just going to kind of analyze them and see what we can do better and how we can be more effective at our jobs. So the first story I want to bring to you is a kind of a sad one. Obviously, it's out of California. Now, I don't generally talk about police line of death duties because they're unfortunately far too frequent, far too often. But I think that for this particular case, that it is important that we get some understanding and then we can learn from it. Oftentimes in law enforcement, there is this mindset that we should not critique fellow officers from their mistakes and things like that. Well, I've never bought into that. I think that we should look at what caused their death. If we can learn from it, if we can do better, then I think that that is the most important thing. So that's why, number one, it's very important in my estimation to go over line of duty deaths and see what we can and cannot do differently. But unfortunately, there's so many shootings and so many things like that, it can get a little hairy and get a little uncomfortable. So I don't like always talking about line of duty deaths. But in California, there was a shootout in which a California Highway Patrol officer was gunned down. This is about August 12th. I'm reading from the New York Times here. California Highway Patrol officer was killed and two others were injured in Riverside, California. So what happened is the officer made a motor vehicle stop about 5:30 p.m. on the side of the road. He starts to call in for a tow truck, and then while he starts filling out the paperwork, he apparently fails to keep his eyes on the person whose vehicle he was towing, and the person pulls out a rifle and then guns down the officer, and then as two other officers are responding to give assistance, he then shoots at them as well, injures them, and then a fourth officer arrives and then takes the subject out. What can we learn from this particular story, this heinous story? Number one, keep in mind that he pulled out a rifle. So unless he had it in his pants or in his back pocket or something like that, then I can only assume, and this is just my assumption, that the officer failed to clear the car and do a thorough sweep of the car. I don't know if this is the case. I'm just doing an assumption once again. So maybe he didn't clear out the car and he didn't do a proper inventory of the car. He did not keep his eyes on the person whose car he was towing. I mean, if the person was upset, you got to realize that. As police officers out there, you got to realize someone's upset. If they're determined to get to the car, make sure you guys check it first. Check it for weapons. Check it for illegal narcotics. Check it for anything and anything that might be of possible harm to you. So make sure you guys check those vehicles before you let anyone back to the cars, particularly if they are behaving erratically and they're mad and upset, pleading and begging for you not to tow their car and everything like that. I can remember one time we had a serious situation in our department where it was a Saturday night and officers were going to tow someone's car. And as they were going to tow this person's car, the owners of the car came outside and it was multiple family house. And as the owner of the car began to get more irate with the officers, people from inside the homes begin to pour out. The officers quickly get outnumbered. The rest of us, now this is a Saturday night in the city where we're dealing with fights, breaking up bar fights, going to restaurants, but on a Saturday night, so where every other officer was extremely busy. So the officers that particular night backed down from the situation and said, okay, we're not going to tow the car tonight because they get outnumbered. We return the following night, which is obviously a Sunday, much slower night. They tell us about what's happened. They want to tow this guy's car. I don't remember the reason for wanting to be towed. Now, it was parked outside and not in fenced-in gate community or anything like that. It was parked outside on the street. May have had bad registrations or whatever. For whatever reason, they were going to tow the car this night. We had enough officers. We, as officers, were not going to back down this night. So what happens is, you know, we go to tow the car. Same family pours out again. They start fighting with us over this vehicle. Start fighting with us, and so a big fight ensues. We're all in the middle of the street, you know, just going ham for over his motor vehicle. And then they run back in the house. We had to chase him in the house and drag almost every single adult off to jail. My point is that people become very emotionally attached for a number of reasons to their cars, right? You take their car, in many cases, you can be taking their livelihood, how they're going to get to work, how they're going to bring their kids to school or to the daycare or whatever, go get groceries, things like that. So people are very much emotionally attached to their vehicle. So you got to be very mindful of that kind of thing. So that's a story and a lesson that we can learn from California about the officer who was killed. Just make sure you guys watch people whose cars you're towing. Make sure you keep your eyes on them. Don't become so engrossed in the paperwork that you lower your eyes and not watching this person. Once again, I'm not trying to be critical of the officer. He's obviously gone. For the rest of us out there, I want you guys to be safe. So make sure you clear the car. Make sure that there's no hidden weapons or compartments, and to the best of your ability and knowledge. If you have to wait for a second officer to get there, particularly if someone's acting irate, then wait for that second or third officer to get there before you start doing whatever you got to do. And make sure you keep your eyes on this particular person. So may that officer rest in peace. Let's move on to another situation that happened in Philadelphia. A fairly well-known story about six officers who were shot, injured during a drug raid. They were in a part of town called the Nicetown Tioga section of the city. As they started to make their breaches and start to serve their warrants, about 4:30, shots start ringing out. Some officers get trapped. This story is, again, from the New York Times. It's been all over. Fortunately, in this particular case, the officers were not, there was no life-threatening injuries to any of the officers. The team that began the breach were then aided by SWAT teams as they arrived. Still going into the middle of the night, about 11:30, 12:30 or so, they were still clearing the building. Obviously, everything worked out. The suspect, Maurice Hill, 36, extensive criminal history, did not want to go to jail, obviously, but he did come out with his hands raised and everything like that. Once again, that was a big story from there. It seems as if everyone did a good job. Fortunately, there was no injuries to the officer. In a previous episode, I did talk about police militarization. We talked about how SWAT teams are often used to conduct these type of warrants. And it's been my contention, and many other people's professionals' contentions, that this should not be the case. And I still maintain that, even though in this particular situation where shots were fired, it's very rare when shots are fired when any type of drug raid. Now, the SWAT team did not do this particular raid. They did show up later to aid and assist, but they did not perform the drug raid. Let me read to you something a professor from John Jay College said. Dr. Alfred Titus, again, this is from the New York Times. Dr. Alfred Titus, a professor of criminal justice at John Jay College, said in an interview on Wednesday night that six police officers being shot while serving a warrant was very unusual. But Dr. Titus said there's an increasing perception among police officers that people are emboldened to not give themselves up and possibly turn routine interactions with the police into violence. The unusual is now becoming the not so unusual, said Dr. Titus, who was a homicide detective and hostage negotiator with the New York Police Department before he retired in 2016. Things like this are starting to happen more, and it's a very difficult time to be in law enforcement for that reason. That is from an August 14, 2019 article titled Philadelphia Shooting Suspect Surrenders After Standoff. So the officers out there who are out there serving warrants, whether you're on SWAT teams or you're on any other type of drug interactive team, just be careful. Just, you know, use your head. These officers obviously did, and everything turned out fine. Continuing with Philadelphia in a more sad story, the chief of police there, or their commissioner as they call him, Richard Ross, resigned a few days later after this particular incident. So during the incident with the officers being shot at, he was all over the news. He was constantly doing news interviews and trying to run the scene. But a few days later, he resigns amongst sexual harassment allegations, racial and gender discrimination complaints that were going on under his command. I think this is a terrible, terrible story. You know, listen, if you're out there as a supervisor, mid-manager, even as chief of police, if you're listening to this, you got to do something about what's going on. You got to run your department professionally at all times, and he clearly was not doing that. This is from a story from NPR. Philadelphia Police Commissioner Richard Ross abruptly resigns. Philadelphia Mayor Jim Kenney announced the abrupt resignation of his city's police commissioner Richard Ross Tuesday among reports of sexual harassment and racial and gender discrimination with the police department. New allegations of sexual harassment as well as gender and racial discrimination among the rank and file have recently been brought to my attention. That's the mayor talking. The allegations do not accuse Commissioner Ross, but the mayor believed that it was in his best interest to resign. So in other words, it wasn't anything that he was doing. Apparently, allegedly, a lack of action on his part. He didn't do anything about it. So this is from NPR. They link to an article in the Philadelphia Inquirer, which is actually very, very damning. So I'll read quite a little bit of this. Mayor Jim Kenney did not address that specific allegation in a news release announcing the departure. Instead, he said that Ross had not adequately responded to the allegation of racial and sexual discrimination in the department that were included in an Equal Employment Opportunity Commission complaint and subsequent lawsuit filed by Corporal Audra McNown, the woman who alleged the affair, and Patrol Officer Jennifer Allen, I do not believe the police department has taken necessary actions to address the underlying cultural issues that too often negatively impact women, especially women of color, Kenny said. Kenny is once again the mayor. Further down in the article, the claim of Ross's alleged affair is referenced in just one paragraph of an amended version of the lawsuit that McNown and Allen filed Monday. According to the filing, McNown texted and called the commissioner in February 2019 to tell him about a male colleague who repeatedly sexually harassed her. The complaint says Ross responded by saying, "So why don't you just order his dumb ass to go sit down and get out of your face?" During the same conversation, McNown alleges Ross said he would school her on sexual harassment and said he was standing in the way of her complaints being addressed in retribution for breaking off their two-year affair. Apparently, Ross and McCowan had an affair back in 2009 to 2011. Because of that, because she broke off the affair, when something else happens now, 2019, fast forward to 2019, he's standing in the way and not making sure that she's not sexually harassed. This is crazy. The lawsuit also details a litany of sexual harassment and discrimination complaints against colleagues. McCowan and Allen say repeatedly make jokes about their appearance, hit on them, and denied the promotions granted to less experienced officers. The women say they received harassing calls at home from colleagues and subordinates. Colleagues and subordinates. They were groped while at work, once in an office prayer circle, and were belittled and transferred to less desirable jobs when they complained. Allen, a new mother, detailed several instances in which she was shamed for pumping breast milk for a baby during work hours. In one case, the suit claims when Allen, who was Black and Hispanic, complained that someone had tampered with her bag of breast milk she had stored in an office refrigerator, a supervisor cracked jokes about wanting chocolate milk. McCowan, who was Black, claimed that after filing an internal complaint earlier this year, an internal affairs sergeant sent to interview her told her, "You can't be sexually harassed because you're a supervisor," and added, "My wife is Black." I certainly hope, and this goes on, you guys can read about this in Philadelphia Inquirer. I certainly hope that these allegations aren't true, that they're exaggerations. I can tell you, as being a member of law enforcement and just seeing things that happen, sometimes the news, paper articles are often wrong, so I'm certainly hoping that some of these things are just exaggeration. Regardless, the commissioner stepped down, and as the mayor said, it was probably in the interest of the department to step down. Listen, a lot of this stuff comes from the top. A lot of this problems that we have comes from the top. You got to do something about it, whether you're a first-line supervisor, as a, I guess in their case, they have corporals or sergeants, lieutenants, captains, majors, whatever your rank structure is in your particular department. You got to do something. You can't sit around laughing at these types of jokes because people are taken seriously now. People are recording you, and they will file suit against you. So you also got to watch who you're having affairs with, obviously. You know, here's a situation where it came back to bite him because, mostly because he didn't do anything about it. I mean, the affair obviously was 2009 to 2011. 8 years later, in 2019, when she goes to get justice, he stands in her way. It seems as if he was just another member of the good old boys club. You got to do what you got to do. Continuing on with the article, in 2016, a detective named Michelle Vandegraaff sued the city, claiming that she had been harassed through her career and sexually assaulted by Chief Inspector Carl Holmes. It marked the second time that Holmes has been accused of sexually assaulting a Philly cop. Between 2011 and 2014, the city spent nearly $200,000 to settle lawsuits against Inspector Anthony Washington over allegations that included sexual harassment of several female officers and civil rights violations. So they've got some issues going on and have been going on for quite some time. You got to handle them. You got to handle them. You got to do what you got to do. So looking back, we went over California. We went over the officer's shot, and we went over the allegations, sexual harassment allegations. I hope, certainly hope that you guys can learn something from a little bit of that. So let's get to some more positive news. And many people may not think that this is positive, but I certainly think it's positive. AB 392 in California has then come law. They signed it into law. From Vox, California's new law to stop police shootings explained. So they're going to explain what is going on in California. So they changed the standard from reasonable to necessary. So most of the states in this union, there is a reasonableness standard. So the courts, whenever anyone is shot, use lethal force is used against a citizen by a police officer. The standard that courts generally look at is that which is reasonable. Was the actions that the officer took at that particular time, were they reasonable? Would a reasonable officer placed in that similar circumstances and situations conducting themselves in that same way? And so that has been always the standard. This goes back to Tennessee versus Garner, Graham versus Connor. Those are the two big cases. So you guys can look at those particular cases. So in California, what they did was they changed their standard from that of a reasonable officer and what a reasonable officer would do in this particular circumstance to that of which is necessary. Police officers do is necessary. In other words, what actions did you take before doing whatever you did? Now, their Penal Code 196, it dates back to 1872. This is when 22 years after California became a state. They're intentionally written as vague, and just a little bit of what their penal code used to read, just a portion of that says, actual resistance to the execution of some legal process or in a discharge of any other legal full duty, meaning that police officers in California can affirmatively defend shooting and killing a person who poses no threat because they weren't obeying orders. So this is what they wanted to change, right? So this law, this AB 392, was being affectionately named after Stephon Clark. Remember, Stephon Clark was a young man who was gunned down in his grandmother's backyard. He had a cell phone in his hand, started numerous protests in Sacramento and all over the state. And of course, with these unarmed shootings and all these other places, police officers all over the country, all police officers shooting people. They're not sure if they're what they're holding is a wallet, a cell phone, or anything else. So they went to change that law because they're shooting people. California is one of the greatest, one of the biggest offenders of people being shot because of their lax laws, because of their vague laws. Many people were not happy with it. Their Black Lives Matter movement, Silicon Valley Debug, a group that's focused on poor and non-white people within the tech industry, they withdrew their support. Malina Abdullah, chair of the Pan-African Studies Department of California State University, Los Angeles, and co-founder of the LA chapter of Black Lives Matter, told Vox, when Black Lives Matter initially came on as a co-sponsor for AB 392, we had high hopes, but said that much of our vision and values for AB 392 were overshadowed by pragmatism needed to pass the bill. So a lot of pro-police groups lobbied on their behalf because they did not want the changes and did not want any type of changes. And so some of the changes that these pro-police groups wanted was no specific definition of what necessary means. Right, so there's no definition of what necessary means. So this is going to have to be fought out in court. Somebody's going to have to get shot, and then they're going to have to go to court in order to figure out what that really means, what the term necessary really means. From the ACLU, local.org of Southern California, California can reduce the number of police shootings. Here's how. Last year, police shot 162 people in the state, half of whom did not have guns. California departments have some of the highest rates of killings in the nation. In a 2015 report, for example, The Guardian identified Central California's Kern County as the place where a member of the public is most likely to die at the hands of the police. Those figures are alarming, but even more shocking were the sentiments expressed by Kern County Sheriff Donnie Youngblood in a recent unveiled video from 12 years ago. During a meeting with the county's detention officers, Youngblood told the audience that it is better financially for the county for when his deputies kill someone rather than injure them. This is what the sheriff is saying. If we cripple them, we get to take care of them for life, and that cost goes way up, he told union members. You know what happens if a guy makes a bad shooting on someone, kills them? Youngblood asked the audience, $3 million and the family goes away. Talk about the warrior mentality on steroids. Check my previous episode about that. Sheriff Youngblood's comments show what families and communities affected by police violence already know. There is little recourse for victims of police shootings and little incentive for officers and police departments to change. This is what this law is attempting to change. How and when officers can use force, that the force that they're going to use must be necessary. They must go through other steps, and they're going to look at what officers did leading up to the encounter. So I think that's a good thing. So we'll have to wait for it to be played out in court. You can Google it. It's on the LA Times. In similar fashion, the state of Vermont, from WCAX.com, Vermont reviews lethal force in the wake of California law. So their governor out there, essentially, the governor in Vermont is essentially going to take a look at what California is doing and seeing if they can apply it in Vermont. So I think that that's actually very good news that governors may jump on board with this, because the purpose and the point of police officers is to protect and serve. We are here to save lives. We're here to do the community a service. And simply by running away, fleeing away, not being sure if someone's holding a cell phone, not being sure if they're holding a wallet is unacceptable when it comes to taking their life. You have to be sure. And I think that that standard of necessary is extremely important. And to those officers who think that this changing standard is going to cause officers to be slow on the draw, to be less sure of themselves, to be less assertive, less aggressive, I certainly hope it's less aggressive, but less assertive, cause them to second guess themselves, slower to react and things like that. You have to remember that Europe, they have a standard that is much higher. You can read about this as well. You can Google this. Europe has a much higher standard when it comes to using force. Their standard use of force is that which is absolutely necessary. So police officers who are working in many European countries have a different standard according to the European Union, according to their European Convention on Human Rights and Policing, right? So they have a standard of absolutely necessary. In essence, before a police officer can take anyone's life, the situation must be absolutely necessary. So this can is actually online. You guys can Google that. The European Convention on Human Rights and Policing, 154-page document. You guys can read about that. Read about the parameters that officers in Europe can use lethal force. It is not going to slow down reaction times. There's no reason for that. All it is doing is changing the standard and making officers think about what's going on and being sure before you fire that weapon, right? That's all we're asking for people. I don't think it's too much to ask for the state of California or the state of Vermont or any other state in the union to make sure that their officers a standard that is much above reasonable. That case of reasonable has led to far too many deaths. And what California has done and what Vermont is looking to do is change that particular standard. In similar fashion, in Camden, New Jersey, they have changed their policy on the use of force. They're hoping to make it a model policy. This is for MJ.com. Camden police launched strict last resort use of force policy. County wants to be a national model. Last resort. So what can they do as far as any type of use of force? Not just deadly use of force, but their use of force at all. And so what they've done is they developed 6 core principles. I'm gonna read to you these core principles. This is from their own Camden, their use of force, new 18-page policy. 18 pages is not exceedingly long. Just talks about all their policies, procedures, their purpose, their notifications, their internal affairs use of force, how they're going to collect data and things like that. So the first core principle is officers may use force only to accomplish specific law enforcement objectives. Seems fairly obvious, right? You can't have police officers just going out there just fighting with people. So the police officers have to be engaged with using force in their promoting the legitimate police purpose. Core principle number 2, whenever feasible, officers should attempt to de-escalate confrontations with the goal of resolving encounters without force. Officers may only use force that is objectively reasonable, necessary, and as a last resort. So this is very big, I think, that you're telling officers that they must de-escalate. They have a duty to de-escalate. So that's very important. Core principle number 3, officers must only use the amount of force that is proportionate to the circumstances. Once again, fairly obvious. Core principle number 4, deadly force is only authorized as a last resort and only in strict accordance with this directive. Deadly force. There is a difference between the use of any type of force, which could be mace, any type of just pushing, shoving, things like that. So they're once again saying it's only a matter of last resort. And it's still, you have a duty to de-escalate, right? So you can't just think about this. You can't just pull up on someone, as in the case of Cleveland with Tamir Rice, just pull up on someone and just gun them down and get away with it. That's going to be huge. You have a duty to de-escalate. Core principle number 5, officers must promptly provide or request medical aid. Can't just stand there shouting things at them, telling them to get their hands behind your back, as in the case with Stephon Clark. If you guys watched that video, the officers are just kind of standing behind the building. This man is obviously down on the ground. Now get up to this guy and provide some medical attention. Core principle number 6, employees have a duty to stop and report uses of force that violate any applicable law and or this directive. So you see your fellow officer using excessive force, not only do you have a duty to stop them from doing that, you have a duty to report it. So these are very good 6 core principles. Once again, this can be read online. The PDF is online, and they're hoping that this is going to be a good model for the rest of the country. Here's the bad news about this particular policy that they've instituted. The legal definitions and the legal standards for the state of New Jersey have not changed. So while the city of Camden has changed their particular policies, the standard for the state has not changed. So an officer can shoot someone or can use some level of force against someone, be held found guilty, for lack of better terms, to be found in violation of their city's policy. The city police use of force policy, and still not be convicted in a court of law. So New Jersey's laws have to change. This is certainly a good step in the right direction. Hopefully more departments and or state governments will adopt this as a policy and see what California is doing, see what Vermont is looking to do, and adopt better policies. I think all of this is good news. It is certainly an olive branch to the communities. You want to build community partnerships, community trust, and this is the way to go about it. And I certainly hope that officers going forward will continue to do this type of thing. So that's it, ladies and gentlemen. I just kind of wanted to talk about those kind of things, what's going on and what happened in the month of August. We had an officer die, many other officers die, but I think that we can learn something. Our police officers can learn something from what happened in California. Make sure you guys are checking those trunks. Don't take your eyes off of people. Fortunately, no one was injured in the case of the Philadelphia police officers. They did a drug raid. SWAT showed up and they cleared the building and no one was hurt. Even the suspect was taken alive, which is all good and all that kind of stuff. Unfortunately, we saw in the same city of Philadelphia, the mayor there had to accept the resignation of the police commissioner, Ross, because he's just failed to act. You know, what you're doing as far as the public decreasing crime is all great, but you got to make sure that your people are protected and your female employees are able to conduct their business and pump breast milk and not be made fun of and all that kind of stuff. So that I think that's really a sad case. According to several articles, he was once voted one of the best police chiefs in the country. So that's really sad to see him go, but you got to do what you got to do, right? So the window dressing on the outside means nothing if the house on the inside is a mess. And we'll also see what changes have been made in California from the standard of reasonable to changing that standard to necessary. It's once again, comparison to the European Human Rights Watch out there. They have a standard that's absolutely necessary in European countries, kill vastly less number of their citizens in comparison to the United States. In Vermont, it wants to look into it, and Camden, New Jersey has already made some changes to their policies. It's good six core principles. So, ladies and gentlemen, that's it for the month. Hope you guys enjoyed this. Let me know when I'm doing right. Let me know when I'm doing wrong. Hit me up in the email, hunterpoliceconsulting@gmail.com. hunterpoliceconsulting@gmail.com. Got some good episodes coming up. Stay tuned. Good interviews coming up. I think you guys are really going to like these interviews. So once again, hunterpoliceconsulting@gmail.com. CPTLHunter, that's Captain L Hunter. CPTLHunter at Twitter. CPTLHunter on Instagram. LMH Police Training and Consulting. If you guys have a promotional opportunity coming up, let me know. I'm still your man. We can do it via Skype. If you live in Connecticut, I could come to you. You can come to me. Once again, if you live in another state, you want some help with some police promotional exams, want to pass that exam, particularly with the oral presentations, I can help you with those. So just hit me up. And that's it, ladies and gentlemen. Until next time, take care. Bye.